All right, folks, welcome back. Welcome back to me, to the T-Top Podcast, brought to you by FlagStick.com. Stefan Tudor back after a week off in the Zoom studio, as per usual, with my co-host, Scott McLeod. Scotty, how are you?
I'm doing great. Nice to have you back. It was a little lonely around here talking to myself.
Is that what you did? I didn't even listen to you. That's how bad my cell phone service is where I was. So you just did it by yourself. Any hot takes I should know about? Anything trending?
Nothing too crazy. I didn't get any wild texts or DMs from anyone that I was going off or anything. But Ralph Bauer was a great guest. And it was a little harder. Let's say that. I mean, unless you've got someone like you to bat things back and forth with, just one opinion, kind of bland. So not my deal. But anyways, glad you're back.
Fair enough. I think
before you start complaining about your golf game, right?
Oh, that's where you want to start. Okay.
Well, maybe.
Let's start there. So I played golf last week. Just one round. Hadn't touched clubs, just went out, had fun. Drive the ball well. I just couldn't aim down the middle of the fairway. I was trying to overcut them, overdraw them. Just can't aim down the middle. Felt fine with the driver. Whatever. No big deal. Right? Wasn't thinking too much of it. Actually picked up a new driver prior to that round. Hadn't played with it. Just off the shelf, didn't care. Just was so sick of the old one. Went to the range today after about 10 days without touching the golf clubs. It's official. I think I've said it before. I might say it again. I probably will. I have the full-blown driver yips.
Ugh.
Full-blown.
Do I even want to be on this podcast with you? Like, are they contagious? Will I get them? I mean,
Scotty, this range session, first couple drives, I was like, okay, I think I found something. It felt good. And then left, right, high, low, top, pop up, everything. It doesn't matter.
You're just scared now.
I don't know. I literally cannot aim straight and try to hit it just down that middle with a little bit of a cutter. I can't either have to aim way left or way right and Bubba Watson it with half the talent, half, quarter, tenth of the talent and hope it ends somewhere near it. It's awful. It's so bad. And I don't know what to do. We're going to do a lesson this week. We'll talk about it next week again, because sure. We already did a lesson for the driver yips once. And now we're here again. And it's, I think we already talked about it. I would say it's got to be worse than the chipping yips. I feel like the chipping yips, you can take a putter from 50 yards out, like Phil did, I guess, at the Memorial, or 80 yards out, like he did at the Memorial. I saw on Twitter. But like when you can't get off the tee, it's so frustrating.
And you go through a lot of golf balls. I can't say that's my...
Yeah, I had to go to the store today.
Yeah, there you go. See? Yeah. You don't lose balls when you have the putting yips or the chipping yips. But yeah, off the tee, not so good. Not a great feeling. But hey, you know what? You're human. That's golf. It's a hard game. I know myself. I played a pro event yesterday with my buddy Derek McDonald. We didn't do so well either, but that's golf. You know, it's just the way it is. We turned it around for the last 8 holes, but far, far too late. We were well over the cliff by then. But you know what? It's just nice to compete, nice to get out and play. I'll just keep telling myself that and make myself feel a little bit better. But you know what? Whatever. It is what it is.
Well, I think that pro, a former podcast guest on here, won that pro and Hannah Hellier.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, a little bit of money in their pocket, which is kind of a trend over the last week, is the T-Talk bump for a few people has come a little late, but it has come. So that happened. Aaron Crawford, story we're going to get into, and our guest this week, Monday, qualified into the 3M Open, leaving another buddy of ours, Martin Trainer, without a caddy, which ended up being a great story and actually a great podcast. I don't know what it was called, but Sean Zach's podcast with Dylan, however I say his last
Dylan
name.
Dylan Dethier, yeah.
Yeah, they talked about that experience and really cool, and you can go find that. I forget what it's called, The Drop Zone or something along those lines. Yep. So he Mondays in. He obviously didn't make the cut, but we'll get into all that story. And then Mark Anguiano. I forget how to say his name. It was only 2 weeks. He talked about it on the podcast. He got into the Colorado Open, went right the day before he came on the podcast, and then he goes on to shoot minus 29 and win it. And people are like, oh, the Colorado Open, that probably doesn't mean much. No, he won $100,000.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, $250,000 purse event, and the dude can play. I mean, if you didn't listen to that podcast, go back and listen to it. You know, he's got a lot of confidence, and he should. I mean, he's a hell of a player, and to do it the way he's doing it as well, I mean, to go out and be playing those tours where basically, you know, it's more critical for them to win money than, you know, guys on the PGA Tour that, you know, have backing, have sponsors, have money in the bank. This guy was in the negative for quite some time, and he's doing everything on his own back, and he's doing the heavy lifting, and he's getting it done. He's not just talking about it. He's getting it done. So to shoot minus 29, incredible. And I mean, what a horse race that was. I mean, a couple of Canadians were in the mix there too. And I mean, but James Love shoots minus 24 and finishes fourth. And Jared Dutoit was like tied for six at 20 under. I mean, it doesn't matter what the golf course is. I mean, that's just incredible golf. So yeah, you're right. It's been fun to see, especially the last little while. Every time one of these players does well, it's nice to go back and pull it out of the archives as far as a podcast that they appeared on. Aaron Crawford, I think, was episode 27. I don't think, you know, at that point, not anyone was really talking about Aaron Crawford, but all of a sudden last week, everybody was like discovering him. And I was having a good laugh while you were, you know, hanging out at the cottage. I was just thinking, huh, that's interesting. We talked to this guy over a year ago, you know, talking about his prospects and what his story was like. And yeah, you know, if you want to go back and listen to that one, I think you'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, it'll also set you up for the one this week. And we're looking forward to chatting with Aaron and talking about that whole week. But just back to Mark for a bit. I guess he's not going to be driving Uber anytime soon.
Probably
that
100, not.
That 100K is good. That's better than a Korn Ferry event. Like
it's close. Most close. A lot of the Korn Ferry events, some of the smaller ones are like 108. So yeah, I mean, it's equivalent. I mean, it doesn't have any status or stuff come with it, but you know what? Those checks cash, that money goes to the bank.
The money's still going to show on the bank. I think that's the key there. He said he doesn't have any status. At some point, this guy's got to get a sponsor invite. This guy, just the year he has had out on these mini tours, he said he's not going to waste money Monday qualifying. I mean, he has a little bit more now. Maybe he'll give it a shot, but I doubt it based on what he said. And I bet you Aaron's going to say the same thing coming up.
Probably,
here,
yeah.
That he's not going to waste more money doing it too. But, you know, like, give him a shot somewhere in these, you know, these low-end tournaments like the 3M Open. Obviously, he couldn't have done it that week because he was in Colorado. But these tournaments where these small stories actually can be a little bit more life-changing, or on the Korn Ferry Tour. And this guy's gonna, he's a player. He's hot. He's got his swing. He's gonna get to the PGA Tour if he keeps this up. But speaking of that 3M Open, didn't obviously watch Thursday through Saturday. Came home on Sunday. I was like, oh, I can't just wait to watch in front of the TV and watch golf and maybe a little baseball. And that was just so boring.
That was a dud. That was an absolute dud. I mean, we were texting back and forth this week, and the fact that, it took us 6 weeks to all of a sudden be bored. I mean, the golf course itself, boring. It just looked like some bad Florida layout, lakes everywhere, houses, nothing too exciting that way. Again, you know what? I'm sure somebody loved it, but not for me. And really, by the time we started looking at the leaderboard, I'm sorry for Michael Thompson, but you know, as soon as Finau kind of got out of the mix there, I pretty much tuned out. And again, no offense to Michael Thompson, he is now a two-time winner on the PGA Tour, won back in 2013 at the Honda Classic, finished second at the U.S. Open, I think in 12 at Olympia Fields. Obviously a fine player, made $10 million on tour, but not bringing me to the TV, that's for sure.
No, definitely not. It clearly meant a lot to him. I think that was the best part of it, just the emotions afterwards. I think the biggest takeaway for me is this course was wide open. Yeah. Absolutely wide open. This is a bomber's paradise that you can just go and hit a driver anywhere and hit a wedge anywhere, and you'll be fine. The guy averaged 285 off the tee. So all this talk about Bryson and all this bulking and the game being ruined, and then, you know, I'm even gonna call it the no laying up guys. They've been going off about this for weeks. Oh, they're ruining the game. It's not even fun to watch. Then this happens, 285, and then they complain it's the most boring tournament out there. And like, we're doing the same thing. It's you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, but But I'm not complaining because it's, you know, 285 off the tee. I mean, I know that and I understand that. I appreciate the fact that there are a myriad of ways to play the game. I just didn't find a lot of excitement with the layout. I mean, for me, that's part of the intrigue, is not only just looking at the leaderboard, because again, you know, Matt Wolf was in there. There was a bunch of dynamic players that were in there, but I like to watch it for a golf course too, that's really testing the players, and for the fact that, you know, there can be a lot of volatility on that scoreboard. But I didn't see a lot of volatility going on, because even the golf holes that were risk reward, I think there wasn't a lot of risk. So I don't think they made them as dramatic as they possibly could. So as a result of it, yeah, I think I went and played 9 holes instead.
That's fair. I had zero interest, and there was no way I was getting off the couch on Sunday after the last hurrah at the cottage left me with a little bit of a headache, let's say that. But, you know, shout out to Michael Thompson. He missed 50% of his cuts this year. He had one top 10 prior to that, no top 20s. So this kind of came out of nowhere, and that's awesome. I like to see that. You know, there's guys that are good friends of ours that are in that same boat out there, that hopefully a win comes out of nowhere or something comes out of nowhere. And that's really good for Michael. I think the coolest story, though, for me is Adam Long. This guy made the cut on the number, I believe, on the 36th hole to get in and finish solo second for, I don't know, $600,000, $700,000. Like, those are the cool stories that you don't even think about. And if you're just watching on Sunday, you never even pick up on.
No, you know, the fields are so tight and the players are so good now, and especially in this type of golf course where they can go low, you know, as soon as you make the cut, that you still have a shot. Whereas, you know, some other events, that wouldn't be the case. And trying to get that through to even other players, you know, you're talking to players at other lower levels. This happens a lot on the Korn Ferry Tour. Guys all of a sudden blow apart the tour and they shoot a couple of 62, 63s kind of on the weekend, and they jump all the way up the board. That's the explosive capability of what these players are all about. And, you know, I guess that would make it a lot more exciting. And Adam Long, you know, this is a guy who obviously, you know, he's won already now on tour, and he added a little something to the mix at 3M.
For sure. I think the exciting thing for me, though, you know, we're bored of the PGA Tour, and I can't say the WGC Memphis, St. Jude, whatever it is, I forget the name of it, doesn't really matter. We'll get to it eventually, probably, and clearly I'm excited to chat about it when we get to it. that doesn't bring me too much, especially with Tiger not being in the field, but what does bring me a little joy is the LPGA's back this week.
Yeah,
Symmetric Tour returned last week, which is nice to see, but the LPGA's back. A little bit of a different format, not a deep field by any stretch of the imagination. Everyone probably very much aware that Brooke Henderson will not be in the field. She's going to wait a few more weeks and take her talents to the British Open in 3 weeks' time, I believe, just the week after. Wherever it is. I believe it's in Scotland this year. You'll know the details. It doesn't really matter right now. But we got a 54-hole tournament this week. Is the reasoning behind that due to COVID, or did you hear anything about why that is, Scott?
No, they've got a lot. They have a lot of 54-hole events on the LPGA Tour. It certainly does happen. I mean, I think just part of it, I think, is just getting in there and getting that first event under their belt. So I think it probably has to do a little bit with COVID as far as logistics. This Drive-On Championship is really an event that's supported by all the other events that aren't happening. They help supplement the purse, and to make this happen, I believe the purse is $1 million. But that's money that's come from other events to help support this. Get the players back there, get them to test out their bubble, test out the logistics of making this happen. Been 166 days since the LPGA Tour has played. So, you know, almost half a year. And they've had to go pretty deep for this field. You'll notice that there's not a lot of big names in the field. I noticed of the top 80 is the first category for LPGA Tour players. And of the top 10, there's only 4 of them that are in the field right away. Nelly Korda being the highest at fifth ranked on their money list. But they had to go all the way down to number 357 on their priority ranking, all the way down to Letitia Beck to get players in this field. And believe me, if I read off the names of the players that would have an opportunity to play in this event if they wanted to, you would be shocked by the names. There's players there that have not played in years. But yeah, they had to go pretty deep to get this field.
That's amazing. I can just imagine. I bet you Nancy Lopez probably had status into this.
She
event.
Could. I think she could actually.
I mean, I think play. She can go to any event, but yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I think she could play actually, and yeah, that might be funny. Actually, I'll have to pull that up, and we can have a look at that maybe next week and talk a little bit more about that. But just for the fact that they had to go down so deep to get the field, it was you know, it's unfortunate, and I get it though. We've got other players that are, you know, just arriving in the States. Maybe they're finishing their quarantine. They're going to play the next event at Sylvania. The other thing that's cool about this event though is they are playing at Inverness, and you know, it's a championship layout that has hosted the PGA before, has had other big major events before, so there's a great opportunity for the LPGA to play on a top quality course as well. So I'm curious not only to have the women back in playing, and Canadian Alina Sharp is in the field for our Canadian listeners, but to see the Inverness Club as well.
Well, let's root for Letitia Beck, the 357th priority list player out there this week. I got her top 10-ing right now. If I can find somewhere to sprinkle that. Like a dollar, I will throw a dollar on that.
All of Israel will be proud when she qualifies and wins. So
there you go. Well, you know what? The story of the week on the PGA Tour, I believe, was Aaron Crawford. Everyone was talking about it. You know, they're talking about, like, he's just a caddy out there. Now, this guy is an absolute stick. 63 in the Monday qualifier to get into the 3M Open. I want to chat with him about, though, does he view himself as a caddy? Because everyone's talking to him. Martin Trainer's caddy.
Yeah.
This guy's a player. He's not a caddy. Has he even accepted the fact that he's a caddy right now? Or is he viewing himself as a player amongst everything of how the week went on his first PGA Tour start? So without further ado, let's chat with Aaron. All right, folks, we'd like to welcome back to the podcast Aaron Crawford. You heard his story this week as the caddy that shot 63. Clearly, he's not just the caddy, he's quite the player. Welcome back, Aaron.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I think let's start right there. All week, all you heard was Martin Trainer's caddy got into the 3M Open, you know, shooting 63. So I want to know, do you even feel like a caddy? You've been doing it for the last, you know, couple months, since the return of the season. Do you identify yourself as a caddy yet, or is it still player first?
Yeah, I'm a player. I mean, that's what I love to do. I like caddying. I think it gives you a good perspective on things, but yeah, end of the day, I mean, I like to be the one that's shooting the 63s.
Absolutely. Which is also funny, because last time we had you on the podcast, you hadn't really done much caddying. You had done a couple tournaments, and we're still trying to, you know, make things meet. And one thing you did say back then was, you know, you don't waste money on Monday qualifiers. And we've talked since, and you said, no, they still feel like kind of a waste of money. What changed this week? I know, you know, you and I chat quite a bit. You said, you know, your plan was to do this about 4 or 5 weeks ago. Why this week in particular?
I mean, it was just kind of some good fortune, played some good golf at the right time. I had only planned on doing the one Monday qualifier while I was caddying for Martin. He had the Memorial tournament off, so I had a week to kind of do my own thing, and ended up doing the pre-qualifier. Obviously made it through that, and it just kind of so happened that, like, the one Monday that I tried, I ended up getting through. So sometimes it's just how it works.
So how did things explode for you? I mean, obviously you shoot 63, you get off the course. How quickly are you on the phone to your dad to say, hey, dad, get down here and loop for me?
So I was about the fifth last group on the course. And there was another eight in the clubhouse with me. So we were kind of waiting to see if anybody beat us or tied us. And there's only two spots, so we were kind of waiting to see if we had to go to playoffs. So I was talking to them right before it finished, and you know, obviously not getting too excited or anything too soon, because I've been there before, and it's not a fun feeling when things don't go your way. So I was pretty adamant about thinking that I'm still gonna miss it, even with the last group coming in. And obviously my parents have been so supportive over the years. they're the first people I call in and gave them the news. So my dad was booking a flight pretty much 5 minutes after we knew the news.
And then I think the second call probably goes to the boss and says, "Hey, I got in." What was that conversation like? Now, we both know, Martin's the greatest guy. I doubt there was anything bad he had to say, but I'm just curious how that went.
Well, I mean, we were kind of joking about it, like Sunday night, like he was kind of saying, like, wouldn't it be funny if like you just like called me up on Monday after your round, after you qualify, and say like, sorry, bud, like find your own caddy, like carry your own bag this week. Right. And I got to give him that call. So it was pretty fun.
Oh, that's good. Were you hoping you got paired up together? Because so for context, I was up at a cottage with no service, and I kind of got wind that you got through, and we texted back and forth a little bit. I was still like, I couldn't even load the tee time. So I text Scott. I'm like, just tell me the PGA Tour got this right for one time and paired these two together.
They should have. I mean, that's a missed opportunity, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Did you guys talk about that?
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit, but obviously he's a PGA Tour winner, and I'm the guy that just Monday qualified, so I don't think they're gonna, toss around too many names to make it all work.
How much did you see him during the week? I mean, didn't see where you guys were in relative to each other as far as those 2 days, as far as your tee times, but did you cross paths at all?
Yeah, we did a 9-hole practice round on Wednesday, and then he was off early Thursday and I was off late. So once he finished his round, he was coming to the range and I was on the range preparing for mine. So the timing worked out pretty well.
So when you guys were playing a practice round together, where did you all of a sudden slip every now and then and maybe go over and start to talk to him about a hole location or anything like that? Or were you able to just say, I'm a player and I'm just going to do my player thing?
Yeah. I mean, he was joking about me having to still line him up on Wednesday. excuse me, which it was pretty funny. He's like, yeah, I know you're playing this week, but like, don't think that like you're not lining me up like this entire practice round. It's like, okay, like fair enough. I guess like I had to make you get a last minute caddy so I can still help you out.
Well, I think that was one of the things I learned. And he had a pretty cool caddy experience this week. Well, maybe not for him, but for the journalist working for him, made a pretty cool experience. I wasn't aware that you've obviously been reading a lot of the greens forum of late, and which is, doesn't surprise anybody. If they know your game, they know, your putting is what makes you a lot of money. Both, as if you go back to the previous podcast we've talked about, but getting onto the PGA Tour this week, I'm sure it came down to the putter, but I was even aware that that was something that you've kind of taken on this year with caddying, just reading every single green out there, which is pretty rare actually on the PGA Tour. Not many people know that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's part of my player background, right? I mean, I obviously make my money as a professional on the putting green, and I think the fact that I have some success on the greens gives Martin a little bit of not freedom. He's going to trust my reads. So if I'm telling him it's left edge, there's probably a pretty good chance it is. I think like one thing that happened this week is when I usually caddy for him, he'll get like the greens book that tells him all the slopes and stuff like that. And I just kind of read them off of, doing my own little process. And this week I decided not to get one of those greens books that tells you all the slopes. Cause I'm like, well, like I kind of know what they're doing anyway. Like I can figure it out on my own. So.
Well, that I was going to ask you about that, because if you're usually more of a reader of the greens, like how often do you even look at those greens books, when you're caddying? Because, I've grabbed those a couple times and, Scott loves them, but those things, they give me, anxiety. I don't even know, like there's so many, he's got one right there. Like he loves them. Do you ever touch on them? And, I guess, I think people realize you're saying like you didn't buy one. They're quite pricey. I think they run like $60 to $100 US each time. So
I think they're like $185 actually.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I mean, if it helps you make a cut and you you know, come last after making the cut, I think you make 15 grand. So it's a small price to pay to, you know, to win a lot of money. Yeah. I mean, Martin always carries greens book. I don't, I just have, you know, the yardage book and, I don't know. I think if I was out there every week and I could kind of develop a bit of a routine and using that book, I probably would use it. But sometimes just too much information. I mean, if you have a 10 footer and it looks like it's a foot out, it probably is. You know what I mean? Like, there's not much else a book's going to tell you.
So what was it like for you on that first tee? You know, first PGA Tour event, you're obviously a professional. You played a number of events before, but, you know, this is the PGA Tour. This is the dream. So
sure.
What was it like for you? You know, were you breathing? Were you glad you weren't maybe wearing white pants? How was it?
Honestly, it felt like every other event. I mean, it sounds weird to say that, but I've caddied on the PGA Tour 7 times now. So I know what it's like to head over there, and I've obviously, you know, done my visualization as a caddy, just sitting there and like, how would this feel as a player? And I guess no fans probably helped a little bit, it being COVID season and all that still. It's kind of disappointing. I think it'd be a little bit more fun with fans, but you know, that's okay. The only thing that kind of caught me off guard on the first tee box is I started on 10. So it kind of goes out for 2 holes. So 10 and 11 are like kind of straight away the same direction. And it was like this into left to right wind. And like just being a right-handed golfer that hits a bit of a fade, like my miss, usually a little bit heely. So like in that wind direction, like it likes to take off right a little bit. And just so happens to be a hazard and OB right on the first 2 holes. So you're just kind of sitting there like, okay, well, yeah, of course, like feeling so comfortable. And then you step up and you're like, okay, well, like, here we go. Like, this is it. Like, we gotta learn how to hit the shot eventually. So, you know, I ended up keeping the first one in play, hit the green regulation, 2 putted. And then the next hole, I might have hit it a little bit too far left, and 6 shots into my PGA Tour career, I was hitting a left-handed shot because I was up against a tree. So, you know, I thought it'd take longer than that, but I guess not.
Well, you kind of described your game there a little bit on that first hole, which you've said many a times that, you know, you don't really think too much from the tee block to the green. It's like, find the fairway, find the green, get that putter going.
Exactly.
Was that the strategy in round one? And then obviously had it ended up working out really well after round one, finishing 2 under.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think what people probably haven't realized is like, I haven't been playing a whole lot of golf leading up to that. I mean, yeah. I had a week and a half to get ready for a PGA Tour event. And not that that's an excuse or anything, but I felt like it was just best to keep things as simple as possible. And that's, you know, get the ball in play, figure out how to do that. Greens are pretty big, so just hit some greens. And, first day, it obviously ended up working out really well for me. My speed control on the greens the first day was perfect. I mean, I was leaving everything, you know, from 50 feet away, I'd hit it to a foot. So I was making it look pretty effortless. And second day, the greens sped up probably a stimp or two, like they're way quicker. And and I just kept on hitting it by the hole, kind of like if I had a 40 footer, I'd give myself kind of a 7-foot comebacker. And and I'd sink them. Like I didn't have any 3 putts last week, but I couldn't quite sink my birdie putts either because I just didn't have the speed as dialed in as I would have liked.
So was your dad through all this? I mean, how was he as far as the experience? Were you looking at him a lot and going, you know, he looks nervous, or was he kind of in control and enjoying it?
I mean, he's a pretty chill dude. I was kind of thinking about how he would react when he showed up and we went to the range, and, you know, you're hitting balls beside Paul Casey, Tommy Fleetwood, and Koepka. And I've been around them for a few weeks now, so I could really care less. But, you know, I was kind of expecting him to probably not say much, look around a little bit and get a little bit comfortable in that situation. So it's really funny to think that, like, this is my first PGA Tour event and I, like, already feel as comfortable as I do around these guys. And I guess that's the whole point. And, in caddying for Martin. But yeah, I mean, he's about as chill as it gets. And he kind of just lets me do my thing. He's there to basically just agree with me and make sure that I get the numbers right. Like that's pretty much his job, and just be there and to talk and talk to. And I mean, I keep it pretty simple for him.
Well, that's what I was going to ask is, you know, as the caddy, the guy that's been caddying for the last few weeks, you know, did he do anything? Were you having to keep him in line? Because I think a lot of people that haven't caddied out there, like, you know, it's sure it's fun and cute for the first couple holes where you're the lucky caddy this week. You won the lottery to come out here. But after like three holes, if you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, not only is the player, obviously in your case, you're not going to be mad at your dad or yelling at your dad, but the other guys, like this is their livelihood. You know, if that caddy's in the way, he's going to hear about it.
Yeah, I mean, my dad's caddied for me probably 15 times now, like 15 tournaments. So he's got caddy experience. I think the only thing that really differs between a PGA Tour event and say a Mackenzie Tour event is you got to rake bunkers as perfectly as possible. I mean, that's, you know, and Martin put the fear of God into him the night before as we're sitting there over dinner. So, you know, he knew what was coming. But other than that, I mean, it's pretty straightforward.
Well, I remember I will remember this till the day I die, is that first bunker I had to rake at the Canadian Open. And Martin had, it was a struggling hole at this point, and he just turns to me and he's like, yep, that's okay. And it's just like, all right, phew, I passed the test on the first bunker. And then after that, I remember just like practicing, like thinking I can do this, like raking the bunker beside the chipping green just to make sure they're perfect. It's crazy. You just don't even think about it. But yeah, you're right. You got to get it perfect or else you end up, I don't know if you saw after the RBC Heritage, Ryan Palmer saying he's going to go find Carlos Ortiz because his caddy missed the bunker. Have you seen Carlos Ortiz since the RBC Heritage or his caddy?
No, I have not. Uh-oh. To be fair. Yeah.
We might need to call knows?
Maybe might be a little bit of speculation.
I yeah. might have to tune into the Crime Junkie episode. There might be an episode about them or something. Yeah.
So but I think, you know, you talked about you know, Martin there kind of talking to your dad and getting him through it. You know, what advice did he give you in your first tournament, if anything?
Martin?
Yes.
Don't beat me.
Yeah, I mean, we were joking about that, obviously. No, you know what? I think Martin understands that, like, I know what I'm doing out there. And I've obviously, you know, witnessed enough shots and enough PGA Tour rounds that I feel like I got a pretty good handle on things. And I think he's got a pretty good understanding that I do.
So now you're going to make the transition more to playing. You're in quarantine right now and getting ready for the Canada Life Series. What's your schedule look like? What's your plans and how are you approaching that? And maybe did that experience on the PGA Tour help you out a little bit looking at this going ahead?
Yeah, so Canada Life Series, it's going to start in about a week and a half here on Vancouver Island. There's two events at Bear Mountain, and then I think we get a week off, and then we're out at TPC Toronto for 2 weeks. And sorry, what was the second part of that?
I was just saying, as far as the, you know, the experience of now sort of getting back into playing and playing on the PGA Tour, you know, how is that getting you sort of acclimated back to being a player again?
Yeah, I mean, I was there to caddy, but I was also there to learn. And I mean, I learned a whole lot of good stuff out there. And I think now it's just a matter of applying what I've learned and taking two tournaments. And I mean, I'm in quarantine, so I got some time to figure out how to practice into my little hitting net here and on my putting mat. So, you know, we'll see what I can dream up here, but I mean, it also helps with confidence, obviously. Just, you know, going from a PGA Tour event to an event where the purse is $50,000. I mean, it's still a lot of money, but at the same time, like, it kind of numbs you a little bit.
That's true. Well, it's a good time to go into quarantine as hockey is starting back up. Mm-hmm. You're looking forward to watching some puck here over the next couple weeks while you just sit in your apartment.
There's worse times to have to quarantine, that's for sure. I kind of wish it wasn't 30 degrees and sunny outside in Calgary right now, but maybe that's a little bit too hot, so let's go with that.
Well, maybe. Well, go Leafs, go. I think you're probably a Flames fan, but you don't get
Flames.
That.
Yeah. Go Flames. Yeah.
You guys, I think it's funny that Canadians are in your locker room tonight.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Not in my locker room. I'm a Flames fan too. So.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to having hockey back, but we're obviously looking forward to watching you at the Canada Life series. So, Aaron, thanks again. We were proud of you. Hopefully you felt that little T-talk bump that we talk about all the time, and hopefully after coming on now, this will just bump you in the right direction for the Canada Life series over the next couple months here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Aaron Crawford, for that interview again, and we'll have you back on the podcast at any point. Great stories of how the week went, and I don't think this is going to be the last we're going to see of him out there on the PGA Tour. He has a very simple style of play, as he kind of chatted about there, and he clearly is a stick. He's not just a caddy, as you heard him say.
Yeah, and you know what? It's nice. It's nice that we had a guy that was on this podcast over a year ago. We knew that he had talent. We knew, like we said, that he wasn't just a caddy. And for him to get that opportunity and to be able to share that with his dad out there as well was it was pretty cool. I mean, you play your first PGA Tour event. You know, you earned your way in there. It wasn't just a sponsor's exemption. You know, he shot the 63 and worked his way in there. So, yeah, let's look forward to more great stories from him and having him back in the future.
There you go. Well, there's another tournament this week. It's one of those really fun, exciting WGCs that just bring me zero joy. This one probably the least, the one in Memphis. I don't know about you, but I don't really care too much about this tournament. I would have watched if Tigers was in the field. I kind of didn't expect him to be in the field. I think everyone did with the WGC. I think he's over it. I think it's four majors and the playoffs and maybe two tournaments in between each year at this point is what people need to start expecting.
Yeah, I really, you know, he's a part-time player. He's going to be focused on his majors. Yeah, it would be great to see him play the WGC and be, you know, warming up for the PGA. But I think this week takes a lot out of the players. You know, be hanging around in Memphis in, you know, late July, early August in the heat. This really saps players out. And I mean, of course, we're going to see a lot of swass this week, which, you know, we don't really want to see.
I'm pro swass. You know that. I need a guy out there that just looks awful in some gray shorts and it's come right through, you know, like I need the heat off me.
Yeah.
Put it on these guys.
I'm hoping DeChambeau shows up in a velvet jumpsuit this week or whatever. And yeah, we'll see what happens. But, you know, good field otherwise. I thought it was kind of odd, though. I mean, you know, if we look at the feature groupings, we mentioned DeChambeau. Rahm is obviously now number one in the world. So these two are paired together. But Ricky is getting tucked in with them. Ricky again in the feature pairings, even though he's 89th. In the FedEx Cup ranks right now. I mean,
death, taxes, and Ricky Fowler and featured pairings.
Yeah, not to say that, you know, Brooks Koepka obviously is a major champion and a distinguished player as well. But
Jordan Spieth in there too.
Yeah, but Brooks is 155th going into this. And I mean, for the fact that, you know, again, you know, I know he had his injuries and stuff like that, and a lot of people want to see him play, but, you know, tucking him in there with Victor Hovland and Patrick Reed, Reed and Koepka, I don't, we'll see how this goes.
Speaking of Koepka, I have a inside source from a range down in somewhere. We'll leave it at that.
All right.
That he had a very rough range session with a few club tosses, one into a parking lot and one halfway down the range. So, I don't think Brooks is happy with his game right now is basically where I'm going to leave it at that. I'm not going to out my sources, so I'm not going to ask, but they didn't say I couldn't tell the story, so here we are telling it. So watch out for Brooks. Maybe the knee's bugging him. Who knows? But Brooks has looked rusty. Playing with Patrick Reed isn't going to help, but maybe he'll fire him up. Maybe Patrick will say something, and he'll just find the old Brooks again.
I don't know. I mean, he's only got 3 weeks left now before the playoffs. And do they mean anything to him? I mean, do you think? I mean, what's your take on that? I mean, we're going to have a lot more majors in the fall. He's got, you know, a lot to play for sort of after that. He's got one major, you know, I guess the PGA coming up. But, you know, what's your take on do you think he really cares about making the playoffs?
No, he doesn't care. He doesn't care at all. I think what Brooks is worried about is the majors. He is, you know, looking to defend the PGA Championship, which is, you know, important to him. Clearly, majors are where he's at. But I just don't think he's ready for it. I think this knee injury was worse than he thought it was. He probably pushed it too hard in the gym. I don't know anything about that, but just looking at his frame and what he was talking about while in quarantine, and hopefully he can get back. I think Brooks is fun to watch when he's going. He's not like bombing at 340. He's just such a good ball striker. And he runs hot, and it's fun to watch. I think he's a great player, but if he doesn't get in the playoffs, I don't think anybody's worried about it. He is not worried about the money, that's for sure. And I don't think he's ever worried about any PGA Tour event after he won his first.
No, I think you're right with that. I mean, thankfully, at least it's a decent field this week in Memphis. Some other groups as well. You mentioned Spieth there. He'll be playing with McIlroy and Webb Simpson in the first two rounds. Another featured group there will be Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa, and Hideki Matsuyama. So that'll be a good one as well. And we've got four Canadians for our Canadian listeners. This is actually interesting. Hadwin, Taylor, Hughes, and Connors are in the field. This is the first time that we've had that many Canadians in a WGC field. So I think two is the limit we've had before. So to see four of them in there is pretty sweet. And the rest of the Canadian guys get to tackle the PGA Tour this week as well, because the Barracuda is on. They have an opposite field event.
All right. We got some Stableford going. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's in Reno, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that is apparently. So I thought Hamilton was bad. That is apparently the worst walk for a caddy on the PGA Tour. So
thin air too. So
yeah. I can't even believe. Wow. That's
Morikawa was the defender. He won there last year, and obviously he's now in the WGC. But you know, Roger Sloan, one of our past guests, Michael Gligic will be in the field there, and David Hearn as well. Again, you know, it's a chance to make some money. Their events are out there, whether you're going to be watching or not. I think it's cool. I like to have one event a year where you have that type of format. But certainly, I pity the caddies this week.
Yeah, I really hope not only you don't choke to death right now.
Yeah, but sorry about that.
I really hope that we see more of the LPGA Tour this week.
Sounds like me playing the front nine yesterday.
Yeah, choking.
Yeah.
Pendrith's back in the field at the Corn Ferry Tour. This guy's going to get a win any moment now. That's for sure. And then obviously more Canadian content. Mike Weir makes his Champions Tour debut this week, which is exciting. How do you think he's going to do? I think he's been practicing. He's had some family issues at the same time, though. Hopefully everything's good for Mike and his game's good. And usually when these guys get out on the Champions Tour, they do really well. But those guys that usually come out and do really well early are usually pretty long hitters. Mike's not really known for his length, but he should be, you know, right up there with the rest of them. What are your thoughts about Mike's game heading into the Warwick Hills? Nope, the Alley Challenge. Sorry,
the Alley Challenge at Warwick Hills. You know what? I actually, I like one where his game's at. Two, he's playing at a familiar venue. This used to host the Buick Open on the PGA Tour, so it's a place he's played before. You got to remember, too, it's in Detroit. It's not far from where he grew up in Sarnia, so some good vibes that way. And for the first round, he's got a great grouping in the fact that he's got Jim Furyk and KJ Choi with him, two other rookies as well. Those are two guys he knows quite well. He's going to be very comfortable with them, and they're going to be a feature group on the Golf Channel on Friday. So great viewing for Canadians, comfortable for Mike. And I think he's going to do some damage. He's been talking about it for a couple of years now. He showed some signs for some of the appearances that he's made, whether that was on the Corn Ferry Tour or any other events. And I think he's good to go. And I'm excited to see how he plays.
That is quite the group. I'm actually kind of shocked by Jim Furyk. You know, I know he's 50-ish. 50, right on the dot?
They have the same birthday, actually.
Yeah. But I was just kind of shocked, because I feel like Jim's a guy that would have waited a little longer. But hey, probably didn't want to go play the Barracuda, and he had zero stats in the WGC, so why not? But speaking of like age that surprised me, we mentioned Jordan Spieth earlier. If you told me, if you set the over-under of his birthday, or is that how old he was, at 28 and a half, I was probably taking the over. Turns out it's well under. This guy just turned 27. He feels like he's been around forever. And I guess he got out on the PGA Tour, what, when he was 20, 19-ish?
Yeah, I mean, we first saw him, he was 16 playing in the Byron Nelson. So, I mean, you know, people have been talking about him for over a decade now. So, yeah, that's why it seems long. But you're right. Most people would definitely take the over on that one. But, yeah, he's not. So think about what he's accomplished in just a few short years.
For sure. That's awesome. One last note before we take a quick break and hit the mailbag, that the Golf Channel will actually not be showing soccer next week. They will be showing the U.S. Women's Amateur Championship, which apparently is running from August 5th to August 9th. A lot of talk about the Golf Channel showing soccer. I think people don't understand how this works on TV and that they probably had no choice. It is tied in with NBC. And maybe the Golf Channel is slowly going away. This was shocked a lot of people. What were you reading? I obviously didn't have limited service. I was getting a lot of texts about it, though.
Yeah, Arsenal Watford. I know it was a big relegation match, and all these matches happening at the very end of the season. I guess it's important that all these matches all start at the same time for football. And as a result of it, they start them at the same time. So NBC needed to make use of other channels. But I will certainly say, for anybody who's a diehard golfer who was not a, you know, English football or Premier League fan, they were probably freaking out, going, "Why am I paying extra money to the Golf Channel to watch soccer? I know it's a beautiful game. I know it's a bigger audience, but yeah." And I mean, yeah. Anyways, I'll just leave it at that. I was surprised that they went to it. Certainly a lot of people that were football fans were trying to justify it, which I thought was entertaining. You know, I was tweeting back and forth with Robert Lucicic, and he's obviously trying to defend it. And I'm like, no, dude, like, sorry. I mean, if I'm paying for the Golf Channel, I want to see the golf. That's it. Doesn't matter what else you show. So in this case, great next week that obviously we have an opportunity to watch the U.S. Women's Amateur.
Well, you don't pay to listen to this podcast. But I can guarantee that in the mailbag segment, we will have zero soccer content. So why don't we grab a quick break and we'll hit the mailbag.
All right, here we go. It's the mailbag. And this week, I don't have to answer all the questions by myself. So Stefan's back, so he can help me out here. Four quick questions this week. Thanks, for everybody, for sending them in. Keep sending them in. Obviously, this segment does not work without you. So let's start. And I don't know if you know much about this. We've talked maybe about it a little while ago, but the Kirkland wedges have showed up on the USGA conforming list. And someone has asked, are they a big deal or not? There's three lofts available, 52, 56, 60. No idea on pricing or anything yet, but what do you think? Big deal or not?
They look good. I'll say that. Big deal or not is kind of weird, but I think they
look... Not my question.
Yeah, that's fair. I think they look good. I like on the side it says steel.
As opposed to putty. It's made of putty or plastic.
Yeah, it just says on the that's funny. I actually think they look good. I think the logo looks good. Everything looks clean.
They look a little like the Mizuno, or not the Mizuno, the new Cleveland ones that are coming out on August 14th. I don't know if you looked at the back of them as far as the new Zipper one or whatever, but yeah.
Big deal. I think anytime you get golf stuff in a big supplier where people are going to be walking by, and like Costco, maybe they see it and they're like, oh, cool, Costco wedges. Like, what is it? Golf clubs? I've never seen golf clubs here. Like, you never know, right? So are they a big deal? Not really, but, you know, do they look cool and probably going to perform fine? Yeah, why not? I mean, try them out. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think it would be important if we actually go out and, you know, maybe snag a set or whatever. But it's funny, I went and looked through the USGA list to find out more of these. They list them as from the Southern California Design Company. So I thought I'd look into that company and see who they are. And they actually do prototypes, and they do all sorts of stuff for all sorts of different brands, not just golf. They claim they've done some work with Cobra Puma. They do some design stuff for a company called Indie Golf, which I look into the product, and it's pretty marginal. But I mean, we're talking everything from barbecues to all sorts of other stuff, so which I'm not surprised by in any possible way. Yeah, you know what? It's probably a big deal for the spouse that goes to Costco shopping for their spouse for, you know, Christmas or holidays and says, oh, I'll just pick up a set of wedges for X price or whatever. I don't think you're going to see a lot of pros out here playing these. You know, you might see some curious good players. If they're cheap, they'll give them a whirl.
That's probably a better question though, Scott, is I'm going to set this. This is my mailbag question for you.
Okay.
Do you think there will be somebody on the PGA Tour within the next 5 years sponsored by Kirkland?
Yes, I think there will. 100%. I was gonna say yes too. 100%. There will be somebody with a Kirkland logo. You know, they won't have a Costco logo. It'll be a Kirkland logo that will be playing the ball, and it's going to be on the Champions Tour. It's going to be in that market where it's not costing them a lot. Some guy needs a sponsorship. You know, they'll have the ball, the putter, and the wedges in play. I don't know if they're going to have irons or anything else beyond that at this point, but definitely, even if they're not playing the product, they're going to have the logo. And yeah, and I don't think 5 years, I say within 2 years.
Wow. Okay. Follow up. We're getting this my mailbag now. You have to name a player. Who is it going to be?
Woody Austin. It's going to be Woody Austin or Greg. Let me think. Glenn Day. It'll be Glenn Day and Woody Austin. It'll be like mediocre mid-level player. Maybe they'll try to make a funny commercial out of it of them shopping at Costco or whatever. I mean, we get a whole fantasy thing here we can think of how they're going to go about promoting and doing this.
Did Costco hire you for the marketing campaign?
Maybe I've been thinking about this far too much.
Too much. All right.
I mean, do you think they'll go with like a bigger name player? Maybe they'll spend some money.
My first thought was Adam Long. He's already sponsored by MLB. Let's throw a Kirkland logo on the front and some clubs in his bag. So,
do you think it'll be PGA Tour though?
I think so. There's no way it doesn't. It's got to. Someone will take the money. I mean, it's going to happen. There's been weirder sponsors out there, so why not? Jim Furyk maybe will come out. Kirkland. All right, what's next in the mailbag? Enough about Kirkland.
All right. Someone asked, are PGA Tour courses too uniform? If standard events varied more in their preparation, would it be a better test of player skill?
Of course. If it's longer, if it's harder and the greens are faster and the rough is longer, and yeah, it's obviously a test of skill. I think a bigger test that they've seen in the past is not fast greens, actually slowing the greens down randomly. If they did that from week to week, where 1 week they were super fast, next week they're super slow, that would be way better in my opinion, and would actually require players to think and actually do a lot in the practice rounds. Practice rounds out there are just usually, I get a look, okay, that's where that hole goes. Okay, cool, cool, cool. I got everything in my hands. But if it was actually like, wow, these are real slow this week, plus we got real long rough. Have you ever tried to hit out a real long rough on really slow greens? Good. Like, you have to fly it there, and it's balls buried. Like, that would be way more difficult. That would be fun.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, they make adjustments, obviously, for major championships, some particular designs and stuff throughout the years. But in most cases, I mean, they step up and, you know, if they've got a 20-footer, they know exactly what it feels like to make a 20-footer. So they don't have any variance at all. They can just go week to week and do the same, a lot of the same things, hit a lot of the same shots out of the rough around the greens, firmness of the greens. So I think you're right. I mean, the tour has it pretty uniform because they like the players to have certain things and they have certain standards that they like to have for the tour. But in some cases, a little bit of variety, I think, will make the players adjust it a little bit more and kind of expose whether they have the skills or not to make the adjustments. All right, two more here. Thoughts on the idea that playing blade irons will make you a better player? What do you think? I think this is a question that shows up in internet forums all the time and has some sort of mythical status. And maybe they heard it from their uncle from the 1970s about his, you know, old Slazenger blades. But my thought is that, you know, that'd be great for practice. But for applicable purposes when you're going out to play the golf course, take the help.
Here you go. Why don't you find out yourself? Go buy blade irons, play 10 rounds, then play 10 rounds with your clubs that aren't blade irons. Tell me which one you play better. Then come back to me. It's a stupid question, stupid comment. You know, I get it, playing some blades and you know your wedge through, you know, maybe 8 iron, 7 iron max. After that, you need, like, why would you, like, unless you are such a good player that you know how to move the ball both ways, high, low, up, down, the whole works, like, take the help, right? Like, why wouldn't you? Yeah. You do it in every other club. You know, we talked about playing with the number one amateur in Canada. He's not playing blades. Like, people, figure it out. It's silly. They're out there. They look great, but there's so many golf clubs out there that, you know, I play the iBlade right now by Ping. It's not a blade. It just looks thinner. It's got a cavity. It's not a blade by any stretch of the imagination. Because I can't hit them, just like Kevin Na said he can't, and just like many PGA Tour players can't or don't want to, because what's the point? So no is a stupid question. Next question.
All right. Well, good thing you feel something about that one. All right, last one here. If you're playing with somebody who is extra slow, what is the best way to try to get them to speed up? And since you're all fired up right now, maybe I should take this one first before you say something you might regret.
No, I'm going to say something I regret.
All right, fine. Say it.
There's many ways. I think a lot of people aren't even aware of it, too. Like, are they slow because they don't know the rules, or are they slow because they're actually slow? In my passive-aggressive way, I'd probably make some sort of joke about it a couple times before I'd actually just tell them, like, hurry up. It's so frustrating. I think you just have to say something as polite as possible, know your audience. But I think the first thing is, are they even aware of it? Is it because they're not aware of the etiquette, or are they just, like, standing over the ball way too long? And yeah, just I think helping people out more than anything. Some people just don't go through the process quick enough. It's a frustrating thing to see, but maybe you have a better tip other than being passive aggressive like I plan.
Well, I'm passive aggressive too, but I do it in a different way. I tend to fast walk them all. I basically, you know, grab my bag, do everything that I can to show them that I'm speeding up, and to maybe that's a cue for them to keep going, whether that's, you know, grabbing my bag quickly off the tee, get ready to go, get my yardage done quickly, hitting my shot fairly quickly and start moving. Same thing around the greens or whatever. I'm not running. That's not what we're talking about here, but I try to make them sort of think, ooh, maybe I am a little bit slower or whatever. And then, you know, if it progresses from there where they don't sort of clue in, then I can start having a conversation going, hey, you know what, that group's up there, we're starting to get behind here, we need to pick up the pace, you know, especially if it's a tournament, you know you're going to be on the clock. I definitely am not afraid to say something, and, you know, had to say it before as a caddy, even, you know, even though it's not always your place as a caddy, but sometimes your player will say to you, hey, you know what, can you maybe talk to the other caddy and tell them that, hey, we're getting a little bit behind here. And, you know, that's a different situation than the regular amateur golf or anything, but I think first thing is just do it by your actions, and then voice from there, and then, you know, just keep pushing.
Yeah, I think one of the quickest ways you can speed up, and I think maybe it's because we both caddied before, is go up to your ball if it's not in their line. Like, get up there, have your yardage, look, watch them hit the shot that it's not coming at your noggin. And then once, you know, you don't need to stand beside somebody while they hit. Like, I see it way too often, slows everything down. I get golf supposed to be fun. Like, you can make it fun and have your conversations, but when it's your turn to hit, just be ready, and then you can have your conversations in between holes. But it's yeah, happens all the time. Just be aware. That's the key, and teach people a few things, which good time, good segue into teaching. We have the coach here. Let's hit the tip of the week and wrap this episode up, Scotty.
All right. Tip of the week. If I can get my voice back here,
what's going on here?
I don't know. I'm a little hoarse today.
You already did your COVID test, right? We're good.
Yeah, I did. I'm all good. You know what? A lot of tournament play happening right now. So for myself, I'm dealing with a lot of juniors playing in championships and different things. And they're worried a lot, obviously, about their score, worried about, you know, technique, what they're learning and things like that. One thing that's always become apparent for a lot of people is that, you know, they have to own it as a player. You know, I'm a coach. I'm there to help them out. But you as a player have to own what you're doing. So you yippee boy over there, you've got to own it. And it's up to you to kind of work your way at it. As a coach, I can help you out. I can find you, you know, different ways to move yourself forward. I can provide information. I can provide training tools. I can provide drills and sort of things. But as a student, you have to own the result. It doesn't happen because of some magic fairy dust. You know, it's cause and effect. So the big thing to really learn from here is that if you've got an issue that's happening, you got to identify what that issue is, determine how you're going to fix it, create a focused practice plan to kind of take care of that and put in the work. Don't just hope that it's going to go away and put in real work. I see a lot of people all the time that you know, prescribe something to them and they go off and they hit, you know, half a bucket of balls and they're like, yeah, I'm good, because they hit a couple of good ones. Well, that's not necessarily the case. You've got to put in real work to make real changes. So as a player, own it. Find out what you're trying to do. Find out what your goals and objectives are. Make your practice plans towards that. Practice. Get all the input that you need. But in the end, it all comes down to you.
So I got to own my yips. Okay.
You got to own your yips. They're nobody else's fault but yours.
Debatable. Could be many
maybe
things.
That's why you have them.
Yeah, maybe I should talk to my therapist about that. Never mind. That's it for this week, folks. Thank you, Aaron Crawford, for joining us. The LPGA Tour is back. We're stoked about that. We're excited to see the ladies back. It's been far too long. 166 days without professional golf played on the LPGA Tour. So we're excited to see them back. We're not really that excited for the WGC, but we'll watch it so we can talk about it next week. But we are excited to maybe get rid of these yips. Scotty and I will break it down next week. We have a lesson on Thursday, 5 o'clock. This podcast comes out on Thursday. Hope while you're listening to it on Thursday, you can just picture me on the range and Scott being like, this is not curable. I don't know what
I'm doing. All good. We'll work on it,
buddy. The podcast might get canceled over the whole thing. But it doesn't matter. It's golf. Golf's fun, and that's why we're here. So thank you for listening, folks. Make sure you subscribe. Rate us 5 stars. But until next week, we got nothing else to chat about, so we'll chat with you then. Boat's lost in the